I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words. That's all I'd live for the rest of my days. And what I feel in my heart, they tell sincerely. No other words.
Our word maven, Patricia T. O'Connor, joins us today, as she does every month, to talk about language and grammar. She's the author of a number of books on the English language. Two of them, Origins of the Specious and Woe Is I, have recently been updated and issued in paperback. Listeners can write to her with questions, mailbox at grammarphobia.com. That's all one word, grammarphobia. And if you have to know how to spell that, well, that's kind of there's a bit of a conundrum right there. But today we are going to be talking to listeners. Our phone number here is 212-433-9692. If you'd like to talk about Yiddishisms, if you'd like to talk about grammar in general, word origins, any you cannot be stumped, right?
Sure, I can be. I'm stumped all the time.
but you can cover it up well. Patricia T. O'Connor, good to meet you, and good to see you. Good to have you here.
Good to see you.
Let's talk about the whole schmageddon. I love that word. I've used it frequently, and.
A lot of people
look at me funny when they say, you know, your name is O'Brien. What do you know about
Yeah, I know. And here we are, O'Brien and O'Connor.
It's like a Boston law firm or something.
I know.
Anyway.
O'Brien, O'Connor, and Schmageggy.
So where does Schmageggy come from?
Schmageggy sounds like Yiddish, and it is essentially derived from Yiddish, but it's not exactly Yiddish. It's what Leo Rostin called Yinglish, or he sometimes called it Amaridish. It's Yiddish as it developed on the Lower East Side. Uh-huh. What you need to understand about Yiddish is that it's generally spoken by Ashkenazi Jews, people who immigrated from the countries of Eastern Europe. And it is related to not modern German, but German as it was maybe 1,000 years ago, a very old form of a Germanic language. But because the speakers of Yiddish lived in all different countries, there were different Yiddishes evolved. There was a Polish Yiddish, a Romanian Yiddish, a Lithuanian Yiddish, et cetera, et cetera. So when they all came together on the Lower East Side and interacted with one another, a peculiarly New York sort of Yiddish developed, and that's where we get Schmageggy. And
so Schmageggy does not necessarily populate in the other Yiddishes.
No, it didn't come from Russian
okay.
Yiddish or anything.
Okay.
Its meaning is basically, I think when you use it to say the whole Schmageggy, you're not using it quite correctly.
Because, oh, I'm sorry.
Well,
I started off.
How were you to know?
Wow.
what you probably mean is
I'm
the whole Magilla.
I'm immediately in the doghouse. Woe is I.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, a schmageggy is an idiot or an incompetent person. It can also, it's a noun. It also means rubbish or nonsense. And it's really of unknown origin, but Rostin himself said that it was origin unknown. But there's another commentator on Yiddish, Lillian Feinsilver, who has speculated on something, and this actually sounds believable. She says that the sense of disdain in the word prompts her to suggest that it may be a combination of two other words for a fool that were used in Yiddish. One was, this is a vulgar word, so prepare yourselves.
I'm ready.
Schmock.
Uh-huh.
It's a vulgar word. It basically means penis.
Right.
The other one was Jecke, or the its German counterpart is Gecke. So you'd be saying schmuck Jecke or schmuck Gecke.
Oh, I see.
So I've been
misusing this word for a long time.
Well, that may be the derivation, but we may never know. But that's one theory. But what I like about schmageggy and other Yiddish words like this is that they're funny. Even when they're used disdainfully, there's a sense of humor about them. There's a lightness. There's a warmth and a smile back there somewhere. And interestingly, the OED's first use of schmageggy is from as recently as 1964, from Herzog by Saul Bellow. The quotation was, "He better get it this afternoon, that ludicrous schmagegi!" Exclamation mark. You always have to have an exclamation mark with schmagegi. But Bellow commented in a later essay called Laughter in the Ghetto that the Jews of the ghetto found themselves involved in an immense joke. They were divinely designated to be great, and yet they were like mice. History was something that happened to them. They did not make it, but when history had happened, it belonged to them. So he goes on to say, the most ordinary Yiddish conversation is full of the grandest historical, mythological, and religious allusions. The creation, the fall, the flood, etc., etc., may get into the discussion of an egg, a clothesline, or a pair of pants. So I think he rather hit it on the head. But some other Yiddishisms that have really made it into English, and again, they preserve this humorous overtone as schmaltz for corny, chutzpah for effrontery. I don't have to define these, I don't think. Schlepp, schmooze, kvetch, tchotchke, bubba or bubby, as my father-in-law used to call his wife, bubby, klutz, kvetch, mensch, mushugna, nebish, nudnik, schnook, shiksa, shmagegi, of course, yente, zaftig, and schlub. So
they're great. They make you laugh.
They do make you laugh.
Have they made their way into English dictionaries?
Yes, they have. They have, and I'm sure that a lot of others are probably coming. Like I don't know if Schmendrick will ever make it in, or Nudnik, but. As these things are used and as they become part of the general colloquial vocabulary of America, they're going to get into dictionaries if they aren't already.
Yeah. So is Yiddish becoming more embraced in daily language? Do we have any way of knowing, or is this?
I doubt it. Native Yiddish speakers are getting kind of rare on the ground. I'm sure a lot of listeners out there still have grandparents or maybe aunts and uncles who were born speaking Yiddish. But I think that young Jewish people probably are hearing it less and less as they grow up.
My guest is Patricia T. O'Connor, and we're talking about grammar and words. And in particular today, we're talking about Yiddish. Her books are Woe Is I, The Grammarphobe's Guide to Better English in Plain English, and also The Origins of the Specious. The number to reach us is 212-433-9692. Hopefully you have enough chutzpah to give us a call. let's bring in Lewis from Long Branch, New Jersey. Lewis, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. You want to talk about Yiddish?
Yes. One day in the course of a conversation, we were discussing the difference between shlemiel and shlemazel. And so nobody really knew the difference, so I looked it up on the internet, and here is the example I got. A shlemiel is a young man who becomes a waiter in a restaurant, leaves the kitchen, and spills a whole tray of soup on some man. That's a shlemiel.
Uh-huh.
A shlemazel is the guy who the soup was spilled on.
That's it, huh?
That is the example, yeah.
Excellent. That's on the internet, so it must be true.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how precise those examples are, but they seem to work for me.
All right.
I have another one like that.
Thank you, Lewis.
When I was reading up on Yiddish, I came across this one that, let's see, here it is. A shmagegi is a shlemiel who stutters. A shmendrik is the offspring of a shlemiel and a female shmagegi. Well, there are some other words that I don't know. But anyway, offspring of a shlemiel and a female shmagegi. That person was doomed from the start.
Oy vey. All right. John is in the Bronx. John, you're on the line. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good.
The one question I had was Ms. O'Connor used the word Megillah earlier.
Uh-huh. Right. I was saying the whole shmagegi, and I really should have been saying the whole Megillah.
Well, I used it incorrectly.
Oh,
I'm a cop in the Bronx, and I find myself using the word Megillah on almost a daily basis.
You do?
I had never, unfortunately, yes.
Is that Yiddish in origin, Megillah?
Well, I never thought it was, but I never heard it before I moved down to New York, and I was wondering where it came from.
I would guess that it's another American Yiddishism, Amerindish, but maybe someone out there knows more than I do.
Right.
I'm just an O'Connor.
I always thought it was an Irish thing. And
the whole Megillah.
Oh, my gosh.
Could it be Megillah?
Oh, if that's true, I should be ashamed.
My
grandparents would kill me.
O'Connor and O'Brien have been stumped on an Irish issue? That's not good.
No, it says, Megillah, a tediously detailed or embroidered account, told us the whole Megillah. It comes from Hebrew.
There you go.
Okay, so.
Maybe that was just my perception.
All right, so Hebrew, which begat Yiddish, right?
Well, not exactly.
Not exactly?
Actually, an ancient Germanic language probably begat Yiddish, but it has a lot of Hebrew words in it.
Okay, so you're not too far off. All right, so
yes.
John, you can safely say that it's Hebrew, perhaps a little bit of Yiddish, and take care of the...
Now it's American.
Take care of the whole Megillah there for us, all right?
Gives me a little more perception next time. Thank you very much.
All right, pleasure. Good
Bye-bye.
To have you. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to David in New York City today. David, what borough are you in?
Hi, I'm in Manhattan.
You're in Manhattan. All right. You have some Yiddish to share with us?
Well, I'm not sure if it's Yiddish. That's what I'm calling about. It's a word I've heard a lot growing up. My mother uses it all the time, and I used it to describe somebody recently, and a colleague had no idea what I was talking about, and I tried to define it, and I don't think I got close. But the word is vonce or vonce.
Hmm.
And I think it is a... It kind of has a little man who has a bit of a Napoleonic complex happening, a little too aggressive, inappropriately loud, like a vonce guy.
A vonce
guy.
I haven't come across that word.
This would be Russian Yiddish, probably, if from my grandparents.
Yeah.
No?
There is a school called Ukrainian Yiddish that takes in... Russian and some other, I think, Lithuanian, other dialects.
Yes. We're from the Ukraine, so that
yes.
would be, yeah.
I can't tell you about vonce, but I'm sure there are some listeners out there
maybe,
who know
yeah.
it.
Well, anyway, we now have a guy
in.
That we call the vonce, kind of like the Fonz, but it's the vonce. So, okay, well, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Oh, hey, I think we have an answer on Vonce.
Oh,
we're
going
to go to 6. Daniel is in New Hyde Park. And Vonce us, will you please? Tell us, Daniel, what is Vonce,
as far as I know, is a bed bug.
It's a bed bug?
Really?
Yeah,
really?
Which actually, you know...
timely.
it's very timely. And also, the Megillah is the Book of Esther.
Really?
Ah.
Yeah.
So the whole Megillah is the whole Book of Esther, huh?
Yeah, which is kind of a long, embroidered tale.
Okay, from bedbugs and Esther.
Yes.
All right, thank
you,
Daniel.
Know?
I appreciate that. Good work. We appreciate it.
I know very little, but those things I know.
We're glad you called in. Thank you very
All
much
right.
for bailing us out. All right, let's go, and we're going to talk to Tom, who's in Keensburg in New Jersey. Wow, what's this word, Tom? What do you have?
Ungapachka.
Ungapachka.
Oh,
which I believe means going in 10 different directions at once. Or someone
it sounds
might say,
like it, doesn't it?
It sounds like a Yiddish thing, right?
Say again?
Is it Yiddish, for
it,
sure?
It sounds like going in 10 different directions.
Yeah, it's metaphorically onomatopoetic.
Yes, it is.
Right. It sounds like that Uga Saka song. Remember that? Uga Saka, Unga Paki.
Yeah.
Right? Remember that? Remember that one? I'm not going to try to sing. I can't stop this feeling. Remember that one?
yes.
See? You remember.
Well, hooked on a feeling.
Hooked on a feeling.
Yes,
all right.
That's what
it's called. Unga Pacha. Do we know? Is that? Do we have any idea if it's?
I'll bet it was a Jewish songwriter. I think that's pretty safe to say.
All right. Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate.
Could I ask one question?
Yeah, of course.
Please.
Yeah, please
mm-hmm.
do.
I would guess that you've heard the phrase "So call me Pisher." Do you understand?
Well, I could
you don't
guess.
Know that phrase?
How do you play that? How do you spell that, Pisher?
I bet you someone who's listening does. I think it means it's an expression of annoyance when you've found yourself in error and been called upon it.
Oh.
Okay,
call me
so
Pisher.
I'll take your answer or someone else is off the air, and thank you very much.
All right, so call me Pitcher.
I can't give you the answer.
I don't know. I don't. You know, maybe there was somebody with a proper name of Pitcher that...
Somehow I doubt that that's the derivation.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting how these words, what they do is they make English a very vital language.
Oh, they do.
You know, English is, its power is that it brings in other words.
Oh,
right?
Yes. It's ungapasha. It's going in 10 different directions.
Yeah.
If I said that correctly.
Well, that was good enough. Yeah. All right. Patricia T. O'Connor is our grammar and word expert. We're talking about Yiddish words and... if I don't get a commercial, oy vey, I'll be in big trouble. Oh, that's right. We don't do commercials here. Let's take a break, though, and we'll be back with more in just a moment.
Oh, baby, what I'd give to hear those three little words.
Welcome back to the program. We have Patricia T. O'Connor here. She wants to talk about something that happened last month. But before we do that, just because we're on this thread and we're talking, trying to get things solved as quickly as possible for our listening public, Bill in Maplewood has a couple of answers for us on Ungapacha and Pitcher. Bill, hello.
Hi. I love it. This is just great.
Good.
Ungapacha refers to something that is overly ornate to the point of garishness. And a related word is chazarai, where there's all this stuff kind of hanging off of things. Pitcher is pretty simple. It kind of comes from what you think it would come from, referring to a little, as my grandmother who spoke fluent Yiddish used to refer to me as, a small boy who or a small child who hadn't been toilet trained. And it's reference for someone who's annoying and irritating. And I would love to tell you the third bit of the Shlemiel Shlemazel story. It involves a bit of not so great language that your guest mentioned earlier. It's not a terrible word, but as I understand it, the Shlemiel is the guy who spills the soup. The Shlemazel is the guy he spills the soup on, and the schmuck is the one at the next table going.
Okay, thank you so
My
much,
pleasure.
Bill. I think, as they say in Boston, wicked pisher. Right? Wicked. Anyway, all right. So before we get continue on our Yiddish,
sure.
When we're having fun with that, you briefly wanted to say something about last month.
Right, I did. First, let me say, do you remember the old Laverne and Shirley show?
Sure.
They had a little motto that they always said at the beginning of each episode, Shlemiel, Shlemazel,
right.
Haas and Pfeffer Incorporated.
Right.
And I used to hear that when I was a kid and think, those mean something. Maybe I can look it up. But, you know, it was later.
Yeah.
Haas and Pfeffer is a... What is it? That's a dish, right?
Yeah.
Made of rabbit? Is it rabbit?
Yeah, I think it is rabbit.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, at any rate, now we know what those words mean. But I did want to mention something from last month. First of all, I'm sorry that I called Al from Marine Park an idiot. Al is a little upset. Anyway, let me get on to the other subject. Sabotage. We talked about sabotage last time because a caller said he thought that the old story that sabotage comes from workers in the Industrial Revolution throwing their sabots or their wooden shoes into the machinery to wreck the machinery. He said that was a myth. Now, that was a new one on Leonard and me, but I checked it out, and he's right. That's a myth. The word sabotage was coined in the 1890s by a French anarchist, and he used the word sabot for wooden shoe and made it into a noun, a verb, sabotage, or a noun, sabotage. The more like to act to wooden shoeage is what it is. But
wooden shoeage.
Well, yeah, sabotage was to act as if you had wooden shoes on. It's to work slowly.
I see.
To slow things down, and he the reason that this anarchist coined this word was because he wanted a French term that would parallel a term being used in England then by trade unionists who had a policy of slowdowns, work stoppages, that sort of thing. And sabotage was what he came up with, to work as if you had wooden shoes on, to be clumsy, slow, to gum up the works, that kind of thing. Had nothing to do with violence. So anyway, just wanted to clear that up.
Sabotage, on we go.
Sabotage, right. That was a myth. On
all
we
right.
go.
Let's get back to Yiddish, shall we? We have Janet is joining us now, and she
Hi.
Is in Manhattan. Hello, Janet. How are you?
Okay, I'm well. One among my favorite Yiddishisms is it happens to be in the Random House Unabridged Dictionary, and the term is, it means... Don't bug me. And in it, the Yiddish term is hakachainik. Mm. And you would say it hakbenishkainchainik. And it means don't bang on my teapot.
Say it one more time. I love this word. Hakbenishka. What is it?
Hak, H-O-C-H.
Uh-huh.
In the Random House, it's yeah. A. And chainik, I think, is T-S-C-H-A-N-I-K, I think.
What a great word.
It's fabulous.
I got to start working that into daily conversation somehow.
Can we take night school classes in Yiddish?
All right, Jenna, thank you for that one. That was excellent.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Let's go to another caller here. We've got Andrea in Rockland County. Hello, Andrea. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks. Very much enjoying the show.
Oh, so glad.
I've heard, back to Vance, I've heard it described as a mouse, someone who is very mousy, as one of the callers mentioned. And the term ungepatschke usually has to do with something that is just overdone. If you redo your kitchen and there's a lot going on in there, it's ungepatschked.
Oh, I see. Okay, good.
And the other, and I don't know if you went into the word plots.
No, tell us about plots.
Well, plots is if you are just so full of stimulation, you're so stimulated that you could just plots. And I think I just looked it up and it says burst.
Oh, good.
Plots is a very big one. Yeah, to burst, to explode. I can't laugh anymore or I'll plots.
I'm about to plots with new Yiddish words. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. Thank you for calling.
Appreciate it. Okay. And here's another one that I'm not so familiar with. Jerry in Hoboken joins us for that. Hello, Jerry.
Yes, good afternoon.
What's your Yiddish word?
Okay, you mentioned before the difference between shlemiel and shlemazel.
Right.
I was fortunate enough to hear my parents and grandparents speaking Yiddish between them. Then I went to Germany in service, and I heard a lot of German. Of course, as you yourself said, it's descended. Much of Yiddish is descended from German. But in any event, the word for German, the word for bad in German is schlecht or schlechte.
Mm-hmm.
And mazel is the word luck. So the guy who has the soup spilled in his lap has schlecht the mazel.
There you go.
Ah.
Therefore, he is the shlemiel.
Aha.
Correction, I'm sorry.
Shlemazel.
Shlemiel dropped it.
Born loser. I've heard that.
And the other thing, too, about Vance, I've heard it applied lovingly, you know, to a little child. Oh, look at that little Vance. You know, it said kind of adoringly.
Bed bug.
Yeah, not only bed bug, but I think I've also heard it used for roaches.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's a bug. It is a bug.
It's a little vermin.
One other thing, too. You mentioned, I think, at some point, tchotchkes, didn't you?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I think Rostin defines it as like a little toy or a little plaything. And sometimes, of course, sadly, in the garment district, the secretary, in quotes, who traveled with an executive might have been his little tchotchkes.
His little trinket.
Or tzatzkala. Now, I happen to have a girl cat. Her name is Satskala. She's a little baby, a little darling.
Ah.
So you'll hear some of the older people swinging a child in their arms, cradling it, saying, what a little Satskala. Related to tchotchkes.
So that's a diminutive of tchotchke.
It comes
sort
off
of.
From it, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, Jerry, excellent.
So I like that schlemazel, though. That really fits, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Schlechtemazel, a guy has bad luck.
Excellent. All right, thank you very much. Let's go to Jan, who is in Edison, New Jersey today. Jan,
how are you?
Oh, great. Thanks for calling in. What's your favorite Yiddish word?
I'm really enjoying this show. It's great.
Oh, good.
I'm not exactly sure if it's Yiddish. My father spoke a lot of Yiddish. And when we were stuck in the car behind somebody really going slow, he used to say, Opa Kaka, Okay, I'm not sure exactly, but it was great. And every time I think of him in the car following somebody doing something slow or stupid, he'd be like, "Oh, that alpacaca on the road."
Oh yeah.
Recently on TV, I heard Machatunam coming from like a regular show, and somebody seemed to know. You know, everybody should understand what Machatunam is, but I don't think people really do.
Well, what is that one? I don't know it.
Well, Machatunam is when your kids get married, it's the other parents on the other side. That would be referred to as your machatunam.
Oh. In-laws.
In-laws, exactly,
uh-huh.
Yes.
Interesting.
I love that one, too. I'm waiting to find out who my machatunam are going to be. Yet,
so. Well, good luck finding some good machatunam.
Thanks for the great
and
show.
While you're driving, don't get oprakakad, okay?
Okay.
All right. Well, thank
Bye-bye.
You. All right, let's go to Peggy in Scarsdale. Hello, Peggy.
Hello.
You got some Yiddish words to share?
Yeah, I do. I have one bliskop, which means a horrible color, like a maroon brown. Like,
that's
what
a good
color
word for
dress?
Describing a horrible color, isn't it?
Bliskop. What was that dress? I don't know. It was bliskop. And what it means is blood drop, and it's the color of the blood in a fertilized egg.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Well, that, yeah. Yeah, well,
you
paints a picture.
It depends on how it's accessorized. You know, you can make it work.
Well, you know, if it's ushkapachket, you know, it doesn't work anyway.
Well, that's true. If it's undone, we're
overdone.
Yeah, boy.
And I had one other one for you, which is milikadika, which is
careful.
Derives from people that are kosher. One is fleishadika is the meat meal, and milikadika is the milk meal.
Ah.
But if you go to a really boring party, it's a milikadika party.
Because it's milk.
Because it's not meat. It's milk.
It's milk. Oh.
Is there any alcohol there?
Definitely not.
That's a milikadika, yeah. Oh, gee. Can I say that? I can say it. Oh, I just did.
You did.
Yeah. It's a family show.
Very well. I thought you had a good pronunciation there.
Thank you, Peggy. I appreciate that. All right. Thank you so much. And let's go to Lauren in New Rochelle. He has some questions about why Yiddish words kind of end up the same way. Lauren, how are you?
I'm very good. I love the show. And I go back to, again, my grandmother and grandfather on both sides spoke Yiddish. I took German. I went to Germany like another caller you had. So figured out that it definitely has a lot of Germanic in it. One comment is the Altakacher. I think a lot of people know what that is.
Yes.
It's old fill in the blank.
Yes, yes.
What it is.
That's one my husband said, when you're talking about Yiddish, don't mention that phrase. He said, don't
it's
bring that up.
It's not lovingly said, no.
No.
But one thing that always
our listeners
me
came
Yiddish
through for us, though, didn't they? All right, go ahead, Dawn.
They did. But the one thing that always confused me a little bit, I know a lot of the words, but they tended to put fa and ge in front of a lot of different words, like fabrent, fashmekt, fakakt. Et cetera, et cetera. And I never really understood why they did that, like geschmeckt, geschmackt, gekocht, and all that other kind of stuff.
That may be the German influence. I can't claim to be an expert on this, to tell you the truth. But I know that there's a lot of German vocabulary that starts with ge and ends in that sort of suffix, the echt.
Right.
Another Yiddish suffix you find a lot is nick, N-I-K.
Right.
It renders an adjective into a noun, often an agent noun, like peacenik or beatnik.
Yeah, but see,
an adherent or a devotee of something is a blank nick. He's an advocate or a devotee of blank.
Am I wrong?
Like
I think of Russian.
When I
think of Nick's, is it Russian or is it German? It's...
Actually, I don't know. Yeah. I apologize.
Well, my grandparents came all from the Russian and Slavic areas, so they have that into it.
It's got to be
and
a little
the last comment I would make is the one that we don't want to talk about or wasn't mentioned. There's a gradient scale of how you want to be declaring somebody a nuisance or worse than that. And you mentioned a schmuck before, but it goes the scale. I think there was a famous comedian, I forget what his name is, that did it. He's still alive, Jackie Mason.
Oh, yes.
Who did the Petzle, Petzel, and Putz, Schmeckle, Schmeckle, and Schmuck. And you can derive the level of, you know, from that scale. So if you're just a little, like a nuisance, you're a Petzle. But if you're all the way up on the scale... And I'll leave you with that thought.
Okay.
I thank you very much, Lauren. And if I get insulted, I know where I stand. I appreciate that. Julie is in Bethel, Connecticut. Julie, thanks for calling in.
Hi. Hi, you're welcome. I have the mother of all Yiddishisms. From my bubby, from my grandma Nettie.
Yeah.
And it was a curse, which in English means you should grow like an onion with your head in the ground and your feet in the air.
Oh.
and the Yiddish is Sivaksen Vien Sibla, mit dein Kappen Dred and dein Fies Roy. And I might not be pronouncing it correctly because my grandma's been dead a long time, but suffice it to say, I'll never forget that.
All right, say it slowly one more time.
So wachsen wie ein Sibla mit dein Kappen Bread und dein Fies Arroy.
Oh, that's a long one.
Yeah, you should grow like an onion with your head in the ground and your feet in the air.
It's funny. It sounds so poetic. You
could
sing it to a Schubert tune as if it were a Lieder.
I know.
Well, if you say that or you call a person a schmuck, which is worse?
You'd have to ask my grandma Nettie.
I think we need to.
I think the onion is better.
Maybe she could call in. All right, let's go.
We're not as bad.
Let's go to Amy in Kloster. Hello, Amy.
Hi.
You got a Yiddish word for us?
Well, I was just going to say what Altakacker is.
Tell me.
His father. An Altakacker is like an old person, an old fart, and you can use it. You know, you use it about somebody who's driving really slowly. Or as I get to be older, I use it about myself. You hope to become an Altakacker.
Oh, so it's not necessarily a diss.
It just means an old person, basically.
Yeah.
And
okay.
The grow like an onion, there's a shorter version. My mother would say, verba groben, which means like go bury yourself. My parents spoke Yiddish as their first language and used it to keep us from understanding what they were talking about.
All right, Amy, thank you very much. Out of time for calls. Thank you, callers. Sorry that we couldn't get everybody on. We had a full stack of calls there, and we appreciate you sharing with us. It was truly interactive. And Patricia T. O'Connor, thank you so much for being with us. She comes in once a month. Your next appearance will be on October 20th.
Yes.
Is that correct? And do you know what you're going to talk about yet?
No.
Oh,
it's gonna
be a big
idea.
Surprise. Big surprise. Something will come up.
Right.
The books are, I want to make sure we get the latest, Woe Is I, The Grammarphobe's Guide to Better English in Plain English. Thank you for joining us, and it was good to meet you.
Good to meet you.